and the loyalty and glory of Clan Battlehammer. Twent had carried Brunner to the lever, had placed Brunner's hand upon it, and had helped Brunner pull the lever, ending the threat of the primordial volcanic beast. Now Brunner was crying, but for Puent and not for Reginald. Nay, not for Puent alone, he came to realize, but for them all. For traditions that seemed quaint to him so suddenly, silly even. For homage to gods who did not deserve it. That last thought slapped back at him profoundly. He wanted to curse Moradin, but inevitably wound up cursing himself. Ah, but what a fool I be! He muttered through clenched teeth. He shook his head, a stream of curses escaping his lips. A fool's choice, he ended. I throwed it all away. He nodded as he spoke the words, as if trying to convince himself. For every image he conjured of his just reward at Moradin's side, he found a complimentary one of Catti Bree, or of Drizzt, or Regis. Catti Bree, his adopted daughter. How could he abandon her in this time of her greatest need? He would see her again in a few short years, so he hoped. Nay, he heard himself saying, for those years would not be short, but interminable. He focused on Drizzt. Had he ever known a better friend? One more loyal to him, including a willingness to tell him when he was wrong. Oh, Brunner was beloved by many, and counted among his clan hundreds of loyal minions and scores of dear friends, like Thibbledorf Puent. But Drizzt had known him on a deeper level, he understood. And Drizzt had not treated him with a deference afforded to a king, but rather with the bluntness often needed from a friend. Them was me thoughts when I chose me path out of the forest, a sitting Brunner said to the cold cairn. Me friends were needin' me, and so to them was I to go. He chuckled helplessly as he considered his audience, for if he was speaking to Reginald, then the Reginald in question was himself. He felt no kinship with this dead dwarf lying entombed before him. How could he? So he had come here to speak to himself, and to speak to all who had gone before, and to the gods who awaited them. He felt the need to explain his decision, but even as he spoke the justifications for walking out of Eruladun instead of going into the pond to the promise of dwarf home, he realized how thin his words must sound to Moradin, and especially to Clangadin, whose edict was to die a glorious death, which King Brunner Battlehammer had certainly done. And then he had nullified it. He had abandoned tradition, abandoned all that was dwarf, all for friends who were not of Delzune blood. The energy of that moment in Eruladun had propelled him along to an impetuous choice, he felt, for now, more than halfway to the appointed meeting time, the passing of years did not make him feel as if he was moving toward his heartfelt goal, but rather the years were moving him, ultimately, further and further from it. For every passing day this abomination named Reginald Roundshield drew breath served as an insult to Moradin, and for the sake of a goddess more aligned with elves. Guilt bowed his head. Guilt brought tears streaming from his eyes. When faced with that crystalline moment, that ultimate decision, Brunner had betrayed tradition, betrayed the dwarf gods, and stolen all meaning from his previous, glorious life. The troubled dwarf wandered away, back through the tunnels, but haunting thoughts followed him, as tangible as if the spirits of the thousands of dwarf dead had risen to poke at him with their cold bone fingers. Everything felt off balance to Brunner. He could blame Mialiki, but that seemed insufficient. He could blame himself, but not without feeling the pangs of his own disloyalty to those who had loved him in his previous life. And he could blame the dwarf gods, as he had done when King Emerus had screamed in his face, "How dare ye dishonor your Da!" "Ah, what playthings we be," he muttered again, a pervasive sense of emptiness freezing his heart. He stopped and turned back in the general direction of Reginald's grave, shaking his head. "Nah," he decided. "I could no have throwed it all away, for nothing was there to throw. Nothing!" Once again, Brunner found himself circling around from blaming others to blaming himself to the ultimate place of despair. It was not the choice that had stolen all that he had held dear, but the mere fact that he had been offered the choice in the first place. "Damn ye, Mieliki, and your Iruladone," he said. He growled and he stamped his foot upon the stone floor. "Damn ye, Moradin, ye didn't come and get me. I earned me place, and ye didn't come and get me." The reason for that seemed obvious enough. Because Moradin didn't care. Chapter 11. Mentor. The Year of the Third Circle, 1472, DR. Delphuntal. Shasta Furfoot, proprietor of the Lazy Fisherman, the Delphuntal Inn closest to the water, paused in her glass washing and looked past the one patron currently at her bar, nodding knowingly. That patron, Ivor Breen Paraffin, gawked at her for a few moments, not really knowing what to do. She had warned him that folks had been inquiring about him of late, one powerful character in particular, and her expression now told him in no uncertain terms that the person in question had caught up to him. Ivor Breen lifted his glass and swallowed its contents in one courage-inducing gulp. At least he had hoped it would have such an effect, though with or without the brandy, the stubble-faced halfling couldn't quite summon the fortitude to turn around. He heard the hard boots tapping on the floor, coming nearer. Sweating now, he glanced around, moving only his eyes, for he daren't move his head. He felt a tap on his shoulder and looked down to see an ivory cane. He slightly turned, keeping his eyes defensively down, to see a pair of beautiful, shining black boots, neat trousers tucked firmly inside, and a sash of golden thread holding a slender rapier, whose elaborate hand cage left no doubt of this one's identity. Ivor Breen swallowed hard, and managed through sheer determination to turn around farther to square up to this most famous and dangerous halfling. He noted Grandfather Pericolo's neatly trimmed goatee and the fabulous beret he wore, a tight headband with an octagonal flare above, fashionably tilted higher on the left and with a golden clasp buttoning down the front flap. It was made of some shiny blue material, some exotic fabric which Ivor Breen didn't know, and stitched in small squares angled to give it a flecked look as it captured and reflected the light.